Hey, this is Nick, and what I have for you in this episode is an interview with the one and only Jeremy Roadruck. Jeremy is an awesome guy. He's a certified life coach. He's been through Tony Robbins programs, and you're not going to want to miss this episode because at the very end of it, I'm going to ask him to give you, the listeners, something that you can do right away to boost your mindset, and it's an awesome, awesome tip. So I'm excited for you. I'm excited for me, and I'm super blessed to have Jeremy Roadruck on this episode of The Upgraded Life. Stay tuned. Hello, thanks for tuning in to The Upgraded Life podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my project where I help people with their mindset, their mission, and movement. I've been a helper for over 2 decades, and in my experience, success for you on an individual level comes back to mindset, mission, and movement. Each and every episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the podcast is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission, and your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the upgraded life. All right. Thank you, Jeremy, so much for being on the show. I'm super excited to have you here. And I'm just going to really kind of throw it over to you. Tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do and how in the world you got to that place in your life.
Oh, that's a big, messy conversation. So first thing, Nick, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here and share some information, some perspective. I am Jeremy, the Kung Fu guy, and I kind of picked that nickname up. Actually, I started networking here in Dayton, which is where I'm based out of currently. And I went to these networking meetings because it was like I had been training martial arts for like 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I was telling my students, you know, the reason you earn your white belt is part of the reason is because you did the hardest thing in martial arts. The second hardest thing is show up. The hardest thing is step on the floor for the first time. You've got that out of the way. So like you're making progress. The journey really is that first step. And you just keep repeating that step and you're going to be fine. And I'm telling them that. And at the same time, like I'm in the martial arts school and I'm not really networking and I'm not really out in the community. And I had all these stories about that. And I had somebody challenge me, hey, there's a thing. And it's like 7:30 in the morning, and it was like 2 a.m. when he challenged me. And so I showed up and I got, you know, 4 hours of sleep and whatever. And as I was networking here locally, like I love what I do and I'm fully engaged in teaching the martial arts and attitude and mindset and different really cool skill sets. And a lot of people that were networking, it's just a job and it's just a thing they do and it's not their passion. It's not really where they want to be. And so I showed up like, you know, way up here and a lot, you know, I'm like a 10 energy. And a lot of people are like 5, 6 energy. And so it got like my nickname. Hey, I was talking to this guy yesterday and he was so excited. Oh yeah. He's like, there's a thing. Oh, like the Kung Fu guy. Oh yeah. Yeah. And like, that's how people started referring to me. Cause I would meet people at one meeting like, oh, I've heard about you. And I'm like, and is that a good thing or a bad thing? Cause I don't know. And that's kind of how that Kung Fu moniker picked up. And I've been doing martial arts now about 25 years. More than half my life, and I adore it. And you know, I'm moving now more into coaching and one-on-one with families and individuals to help them kind of reframe their life, right? Because for martial arts, we have a saying, when your life is on the line, don't waste time, right? So you really get, you're going to die tomorrow, you're going into combat, you got to have your head clear, you got to have your heart clear, and you got to know the reasoning. And if you don't have that, you're going to go in fighting 2 opponents. You got the bad guys out there, but you've got that instability inside.
Yeah.
And so, you know, getting that stuff clear begins to change what's going on externally. And I kind of got into the martial arts. I grew up, went through some unpleasantness. I had some abuse at 5 and 6, and I basically became a teenager and started my midlife crisis when I was somewhere around 5 or 6 years old. Why are we here? What's our fate? Why do people say one thing, they mean a second thing, but they do a third thing? And I'm sitting here going, I don't understand. And prior to being abused, like I would run into traffic. I had no fear. I was on a leash because I was just insane. And I was just curious, like what's going on? I'd run out there, what's happening? And my mom had to pull me out of being run over. We lived in Turkey and I climbed on the tree in the backyard, got on the roof running around. And then the abuse amplified that energy. But I realized, like, I come in at this really high level and a lot of energy. If you've ever played tic-tac-toe with a seven-year-old who unconsciously thinks if they lose, they're going to die. My energy was mismatched, and I realized people were recoiling. They were backing off, and so I had to dial it down. And I became very good at observing and sitting back, and what do I need to be in this moment? What do I need to mimic so that I'm in the safest position possible? And I kind of lived that way unconsciously for about 20 years. And then I had another 10 years to kind of work through it and got some certifications and some master level stuff and really put Humpty Dumpty back together. Wow. And the martial arts was the vehicle that really opened all of that up, because I could be very intellectually engaging and dominant, and I got a room full of people that are going to just pound me into the ground and not really care.
Awesome. Yeah.
And it helped get my body connected and my emotions, instead of my mind driving and my projections. And I know you're going to reject me, so I'm going to make you do it on my terms, mm-hmm. by just, you know, torquing you off. Cause now I know the rejection's coming, cause I'm already rejecting me. So now I'm going to get you to reject me. Thanks. I'll do it. I'm not going to wait for it. I'm just going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how, you know, I've done factory work. I've done corporate software testing. I've worked at Renaissance festivals, been a security guard, been in the military as a reservist. Like, I've done a bunch of different stuff, but I always came back to the martial arts. That was like my home, and where everything really connected. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at now. Got a couple of best-selling books. The only parenting book I know of with a money-back guarantee. So
nice.
It's all based on stuff that works. Cause if I make the kid mad, they quit. If I make the parents mad, they quit. So sure. I've got to, like, I can't just say because I said so. And that quit with me at five anyway. So mm-hmm. that's kind of like my story, I guess.
Sure.
In the high level, you know, 1,000 foot.
Yeah. So I like that part when you were talking about being the Kung Fu guy and then getting challenged to go to that networking group, right? The hardest part was showing up, right?
Absolutely.
The second hardest part was, hey, you know, I'm the Kung Fu guy. I'm sure that's not what you said at that first part, but you basically emulated what you tell your own students there, right?
Yeah. How can I act in integrity? And this is what I tell them. And this is the frame of reference or the story I'm giving them. Okay, so what are you doing, Jeremy? Yeah. Oh, shut up.
Yeah, I have a background in corrections. I'm celebrating my 20th year in youth corrections. And
oh, wow.
I remember when we first started, when I first started back in 99, and we would tell kids, you know, half of making it in life is showing up, right? So we would do 50%. I tell them now it's like 80%.
It's 80%, right? Yeah.
That if, and the reason, and they kind of look at you like, what? And I said, I'm serious. Here's how it goes. If you want to get that job, doesn't matter what that job is, right? And in order to get out there and just, you know, get on your feet, you could be the best skilled employee at whatever that job is. But if you don't show up, you're worth zero to your manager, to your boss, and to that company or organization, no matter what it is. So literally just showing up, right, is 80% of it. Because most of the time we can teach you and train you to do the rest of the 20% of it. But again, if you're not there, then we can't teach or train you. And they don't believe you at first, so they'll get out and you're like, you're so right. And this other guy, he's like a lot better at the job, but he never shows up. So they fired him.
Right. That entitlement and that expectation of, well, I'm better, I deserve. Yeah. Good luck with that. There are world-class athletes that are functionally flipping burgers because they don't put in the effort.
Right.
They don't show up to practice. They don't show up when it matters. We're like, well, but I can play on game day. Yeah, but it's not game day that matters. It's all the other stuff, because you're part of a team. And we all know the only I in team is in the a-hole. So are you going to be the a-hole today?
Yeah.
And I'll do that with my kids, and I'll draw it out in capital letters. And then I color in the I from the capital letter A. You've got the line and you've got the dot.
Yep.
And the kids go, ooh, and the parents are sitting there going, I can't believe you did that. Yeah, yeah, there's the whole of the A. See the A hole? That's the I in teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm over here on the West Coast and close to the Portland market. So I'm a Blazer fan and Damian Lillard fan. And, you know, last summer I read a book called Unstoppable, and there's a couple chapters in there that are dedicated to Lillard. Anyway, long story short, but that idea of, you know, you look at pro level athletes, like you were saying, right? Well, they're all incredibly talented, gifted athletes, but what makes an all-star NBA player versus just your bench player, your minimum wage, you know, NBA player? And that book describes, you know, Damian kind of took it on the nose because he wasn't a five-star recruit coming, you know, into college. And then, you know, he was kind of
had this, he was a decent college basketball player, but anyway, somebody put into his head is that you've got to be a 7 day a week type of dude if you're going to make it to be an all-star in the NBA. So he started putting in work, you know, 7 days a week. It's not just practice, right? If you want to be elite, you got to put in work 7 days a week. And so I gained a new respect. I was already a fan, but then when I read those chapters about him, I gained a new respect for him, and just, you know, he took it to heart. And his thing was, he wanted to make, his goal for himself was to make 400 shots in a workout on Saturday and Sunday. Not just take 400 shots, but make 400 shots.
Yeah. Well, that's what excellence is, right? We call it with my students, good is the enemy of great. I'm getting B's, I'm good. But you could be amazing, you could be outstanding. And if I draw a bell curve for the students and I say, look, if you're a BC student, you're here in the middle. That means you have, yeah, it's comfortable, but you also have the most competition for places to live, restaurants, dating, entertainment, everything. It's all there in the middle. So if you want to be amazing, you can be outstanding or you can be a warning. Mm-hmm. The D and F, that's the warning of what not to do. The A+, that's the example of what to do. So do you want to be the example or the warning? And I draw it kind of on a diagonal bias so that it's skewing down towards that DF. And up there's that A, because it takes work to be on either side. I mean, you really have to work hard at failing to truly fail.
Sure.
Because there's so many opportunities and so many chances and so many people will help you if you just take a little bit of initiative. You know, and you, I'm not going to say it's all 100% by your bootstraps, because there is luck involved. Mm-hmm. But if you show up and you're active, it's funny. The harder I work, the luckier I get.
Right. Yeah. Right. Isn't it luck favors the prepared, right?
Yeah.
You know, my background, formal background, is in counseling and psychology. And so, I'm going to blank the author's name, but he wrote a book called, or his concept is, planned happenstance. Right. Mm. And so, yeah, we can say luck or we can say, you know, opportune. However, if you're not actually putting yourself out there in front of people or whatever the scenario is, then that luck's never going to find you. Right. And so luck favors the prepared.
Well, there's a great line I've discovered: God won't tie my shoes without me. Mm-hmm. All the faith in the world, but just sit on the couch and eat Cheetos and demand the world come to you. Mm-hmm. Nope. You've got to be out active. You've got to, from our point of view, you're out there, you have an identity and you're creating a resonance. You're creating a frequency. You're creating a gravity. And the quote unquote denser you are, right, the more powerfully centered you are, then you start to resonate differently and opportunities present themselves. The universe going, hey, do you really want this? Because you could have something more, but you could take this if you want. Are you serious? And the more you stay clear on this is my lane, this is what I'm here to achieve, do, have, give, be, et cetera, in a way that enriches everyone around you, because you're still connected versus isolated. But when you do that, you have that clarity of purpose, everything opens to you.
Sure.
Because you resonate and you're actually, it's the reticular activating cortex. You're pre-framing yourself unconsciously that those opportunities, your unconscious goes, dude, and you're, or dudette, because I don't know who's listening, but it's just that, oh, and then you take those and it's perceived as luck, but your channels are open a little different. Mm-hmm. Your frequencies are off a little bit and you notice that stuff and, you know, it's amazing.
Sure. So just in these few minutes that I'm spending here with you, I can definitely tell you're high energy. You probably have a lot going on. If I could see a screenshot of your calendar, it's probably pretty packed from top to bottom. And so here's a question that I get faced with quite a bit, and I want to put it to another high energy person is, you know, what's your outlook or what's your take on personally? And then how do you respond to other people when they say, man, you're doing too much. You're going to burn yourself out.
There's times, yeah, for me, it's again, that wave, it's that balance. And so, I use a concept of time blocking and color coding activities. Mm-hmm. And so I look at what we do as human beings in six dimensions. There is physical stuff, there's mental stuff, there's emotional stuff, there's spiritual stuff, which you can take religious, or you can take the energy behind things. I'm not going to say what it should be. There's financial stuff. And those are all separate because physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and then financial is on the other side. The more you get these ingrained, the better that gets. And then you have relationship, personal, professional, intimate, of how you connect to other people. And the relationship is the bridge to the finances, because you're not going to make the finances in isolation. And so in those six categories, you plot out your week or you look at your activities and you begin blocking out the first step. What are the most important things to me? Block those out. And then you have that particular color. And you kind of map out the week, and then you kind of gloss your eyes And as you look at it, is it an even spread of color? Maybe, maybe not. But then you look at your month, is it an even spread or do the colors kind of thematically move through so that you're looking at the time you're going in? Okay, the first 2 weeks are going to be a little more finance heavy, a little more professional relationship heavy. Then that third week is going to be more intimate relationship with my wife. And then that next week is going to be more with the kids and some friends. And so you kind of have these little cycles of in the day, what's your color code? In the week, what's your color code? In the month, in the quarter, in the year. And then you now have, where's your energy going and what's really going on? And part of that physical, you got to have downtime. You've got to have that rejuvenation physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Where are you going to connect to source for you? Where are you going to get new information? What books are you reading? What exercise are you doing? You know, whether it's high energy external exercise or sitting and breathing and doing meditation and Qigong, what are you doing? Like plan that stuff. And then also all of that, 80%. There's still that 20% wiggle room of things happen. Car broke down, kid threw up. So you've got some sliding scale. And then, you know, each day, if I get this one or two things done, that was a well-lived day. What is that? It could be, I want my wife to be so happy she can't say anything. That's my mission for the day. All right, cool. What can you do, right? Or I got to get this connection to this person. It's a huge deal. Okay, that's the thing. Then you have a focus energetically, and because you're color coding it, you're letting the right side of your brain enjoy. But because you're sequencing it and writing down priorities, the left side of your brain likes that structure and seeing the locks and pieces and how it all connects together. And you don't have to be 100% scheduled the entire day. You can have just room to be like, I'm going to sit outside for 20 minutes and drink coffee and stare at birds. And that's that mental downtime or that emotional downtime of not on social, not really doing anything, just kind of veg. And then that's when inspiration can strike because you're available. So that's kind of the overall strategy.
Yeah. So I'm super glad I asked you that question, because as you were filtering through it, I had some thoughts, some things that made sense to me. Right. And so the first thing that came was it's a no duh brainer. Right. But if you have clarity about, you know, who you are and what your personal mission is, that's why I talk about, you know, mindset, mission, and movement, that when you have clarity around those things, then the schedule can be as busy or not according to what your intentionality is around that. Right.
Absolutely.
But when you and I, when people like you and I, when other people look at it, whether it's our friends or families or whatever, new people in our network, and they look at us, and then potentially it becomes anxiety provoking for them. We're like, oh my gosh, I could, how do you do it? Right. And then, so that's what kind of realization, yeah, you're right. Without clarity, without knowing what your mission is, then yeah, this is going to look like it's a lot and it may frighten you. Right. But,
Well, yeah.
First step is showing up. Well, and the second step is stepping on the mat, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like you said, it's having clarity in where you are and where you want to get to, right? So in the ancient temples, in our system, it's a Shaolin system that went into the secret societies, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, comic book drama stuff, like literally, like people in our ancestry died to protect this information and get it to the next generation. But in the temples in the old days, the Shaolin temple was kind of like a university, right? So someone says, oh, I graduated from Harvard, from Harvard, right? It's not which school. It's not you have a degree in everything that Harvard does. You have a specific school. So it's a college of engineering, or it's a college of medicine. So you have university, then you have college. Then inside the college, you have certain disciplines. And so inside the Shaolin, they had these different systems and styles and approaches, and each one was its own contained kind of universe, but it had certain energies and themes to it. So let's say I have a child come in or a student come in, and they're really slow and they talk slow and they just, so for that person, maybe we're going to give them access to tiger energy, and then tiger is more aggressive. It's more dynamic. It's more powerful, because we want to help balance them out energetically. But then I get a kid who comes in and who talks really fast. He's really high energy and he really is excited about everything. He's always curious about all the stuff that's going on. I don't want to add tiger to that, because I'm going to amplify that energy. So he's going to get elephant to slow him down and get him to back to even keel. Then when the temple got destroyed, not everybody knew all the systems and processes, and not every teacher knew all the systems. Like different teachers would have like two or three systems and some supplemental skills. So now they're teaching, the temple's destroyed. I'm in a village and all I got's what I got. and I have a kid who's aggressive, but all I got's Tiger, so I'm gonna teach him Tiger. And he's gonna resonate that with a certain level, and then he'll teach that on, and he may keep some things, he may drop some things, because he wasn't raised in the temple, he was raised outside of it. And he had, you know, family and those pressures. And so it's that idea of, we call it attainable and sustainable. Attainable, you could do the thing. Sustainable, it actually fits your life. And so, you know, I got 87 things going today, and someone's like, oh my gosh, that's exhausting. Just looking at your schedule, I'm exhausted. That's fine. You're not running Tiger energy. You're running, you know, crane energy or leopard energy or snake energy or dragon energy. That's fine. The skeleton, time blocking, color mapping, that stuff still works. Your palette of colors and your, you know, you're not going to put 13 things on the table. You're going to put 4 things on the table or 5 things. That's fine. That's you. You do you. You don't need to justify. You don't need to rationalize. Just own it. And if you want to be at that other level, you can grow that skill, because everything human beings do is a skill over time. You can practice. Mm-hmm. And then that gives room for people to just be where they are. And you can be happy, but you don't have to be satisfied. And then you can move to that next level of whatever next level is for you.
So hold that there. Happy versus satisfied. Talk more about that.
Yeah. So are you happy? Do you have to achieve in order to be happy, right? So a lot of people have and rules for happiness and pleasure, and they have or rules for pain. If I do this and this and this, then I'll be proud of myself. Then I'll be happy with myself. But if I do this or I do that, now I'm going to be mad at myself. Mm. So if I'm a dad, if I yell at my kids, or I am 2 minutes late for a thing because schedules are so important, or if traffic held me up, then I'm going to be mad. Mm-hmm. But to be happy, well, I have to be even keeled with my kids, and they have to do a good job listening, and my wife has to like give me a pat on the back or rub my back at the end of the night, and two of those I'm not mm-hmm. in control of. For me to feel good as a man or as a father, I got to have these three things, two of which I can't control anyway. So my happiness is being tied into all these other, it's enmeshed in these other places mm-hmm. versus one of my rules for being happy is anytime I get myself or someone else to laugh, I'm allowed to feel happy. Wait, so if I think of something silly and I make myself laugh, that counts? Yes. If I say something silly and my kids laugh, that counts? Yes. Or if my wife laughs? Yes. And now if I can do something silly that makes me laugh and it makes the two of them laugh, oh, I'm now tripling the happiness. That's an easy game to win, and I'm in control of all of it. So which is better? I have to achieve X and Y and Z and P and D and Q before I can be happy, or I can just decide to be happy very easily and then go achieve stuff.
Right.
If you get to write the game, you get to write the rules. Why not set yourself up to win, and everyone else gets to win around you too, and you're more fun to be around.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and that's really
kind of happy, but still growing. That's that not satisfied. I'm still growing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're really kind of punching into mindset, right? And so those and or rules, where do they come from?
It's all BS. Belief systems. Belief systems. I don't know what you were thinking, but belief systems.
You just made me laugh. You get a chalk there, Mark. There.
I do. I win, you win, right? Yeah. So, and I know listeners are going, what? Because I throw out, it's BS. And people are like, what? Yeah, belief systems. What were you thinking? And they're like, because it's right. It is. BS is, could be taken in several ways. But a lot of our and rules or rules for pain, for pleasure, it gets wired into us when we're kids. Because where do mom and dad give us the most energy, positive or negative? Because we need that first. But then where are we given rewards? When are we allowed to be happy with ourselves? Is a lot of it conditioned through parents and through teachers, through mentors. It's environmental. And then over time, you know, you run into somebody like me and I teach you how to reorganize your belief systems to like support where you actually want to go. Yeah, Tony Robbins has Date with Destiny. That is a fantastic workshop to really just, these are the values important to me that I want to move towards. These are the ones I want to move away from. How do I know I'm doing that? And you literally intentionally rewire that. You can read Awaken the Giant Within is the book that he wrote to go with the workshop. Those are beautiful tools to really start to live by design versus default. Because most people that I've met are dealing with stuff that happened usually between 4 and 11 years old. They have some sort of a hurt or some sort of a miscue or a misfire. And now they're living all of these patterns based on that thought. They never unthought it, mm-hmm. right? And give you an easy example. Most kids are told, don't talk to strangers. And then a lot of people are told, don't take money from friends. And then they want to go into business and they struggle because unconsciously those two thoughts are running. I'm talking to this person, so they're not a stranger, and I'm taking money from them, so they're not a friend. So your unconscious is trying to categorize this person going, well, they're not a friend, but they're not a stranger. What's left? Enemy. And there's this unconscious stress, a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of adrenaline running through the system of I don't know how to handle this. I'm uncomfortable. Until we like reanalyze those thoughts and go, wait a minute. I was a child and they said, don't talk to strangers. And the truth is strangers have everything I want. Strangers built everything I want. I didn't build that cell phone. I didn't build that cell tower. Somebody had that idea and I want to leverage that technology. I don't have to invent fire for it to count. So that idea of don't talk to strangers was important as a child, but now I'm an adult and I can talk to strangers. Strangers are just friends I haven't met yet. And I can change that thought. Now I'm talking to this person and don't take money from friends. Of course, take money from friends. Provide value and exchange and receive. It's all good. And by rethinking those two thoughts, all of a sudden that unconscious resistance to business and money's evil and dirty, that stuff starts to go away because I took away that enemy frame of reference in the unconscious mind.
Mm-hmm. Love it. So, you know, my background in training, again, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, earned a PhD in counseling back in 2015. And about a year and a half ago, I really kind of full pivoted into embracing the title and of life coach. Mm-hmm. And actually it was Tony Robbins listening to some of his stuff. And I've read Awaken the Giant Within. Mm-hmm. But he was parsing out the six life needs. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned a name where he partnered with to develop it. And I'll butcher the name. It's Chloe Madonnais, but
Madonnas.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, you're fine.
But her name was in my memory bank because she partnered with Jay Haley and created strategic family therapy. It's one of the kind of pillars of family therapy, so to speak. Right. Mm-hmm. So I remember, so I thought, okay. So Tony Robbins and Chloe made this. It can't be a bunch of BS belief systems, right? And yeah. So that really forced me, compelled me, at least from a point of integrity, to take a much closer look at it. Because prior to that, I would have been, you know, what is a life coach? And oh my gosh, you know, they don't have any of the training or preparation or experience that I do. And there was the enemy, right? That, you know, you're a stranger, you're not a friend, you know, that the enemy kind of really came, took over. And that's the way a lot of counselors will look at that, to be honest with you. And so really looking at it from a point of integrity and then stepping back. And so the overlap that I see, you know, from the personal development life coaching world, and then the things that I learned, you know, from the clinical psychology end of it, there's so many parallels and there's so many overlaps. And if we could just, join hands and work together, you know, we could get so much done. But that, you know, I call it the way I work with people is that we all have a negative default mindset. Right. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, oftentimes it's coming out of these formative experiences that get hardwired and we just kind of carry with them for the rest of our life. And what I heard you describing was, you know, what I used to call, creating cognitive dissonance. Right.
Yeah.
Because here's what it is and here's where it came from. Yep. Right. But here's what you want. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to bridge that gap? Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or I'd say, you know, you're 32 years old, man. Are you still going to be taking the beliefs and mindsets that you developed as a 4-year-old?
Right. Right. What we say is a thought will persist until it is unthought. Mm-hmm. Right. And I have master level certifications in neuro-linguistic programming, the same as Tony, hypnotherapy and neurostrategies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, how we build our unconscious mind and the archetypes and Jungian psychology. I love Jungian. Depth psychology and how you integrate and individualization and projection. And another thing people don't talk about is introjection, right? If you're raised in a toxic environment, that becomes your natural set point is anxiety and stress. And then you get into a situation where you're actually like happy and successful. And a part of you goes, no, this isn't right. It's too easy. There needs to be drama. And you implode because you're biochemically registered or set for, I got to be in stress to be safe. And so we see all these people who go out and create drama and create unnecessary mm-hmm. stuff and go, well, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. It's because of their barometer. You know, whose love did you have? Whose love did you crave? Who did you have to be to get the love you craved if you could? because you have an absentee parent. There's a lot of projection there. So a lot of that begins to fill in the gaps. And the labeling is less important for me anyway than the impact. And it's can you get to the result and then get there intelligently? Because there are a bunch of people that are quote unquote life coaches. I was at a Tony event and there were these 22-year-old girls and they're like, well, we're going to be business coaches. Like, have you ever run a business? No. Have you ever done? No. Do you know anything about? No. Do you understand taxes? No. So they're going to coach people because they think it's sexy and cool with zero qualifications, right? Right now, Caleb Maddox has a program called Apex for Kids, and it's like personal development for your kids. Now he's branching into coaching parents at like 19. and part of that, you know, we can grin and kind of go, okay, kid. I wrote my best-selling book, Your Best Child Ever Is This Game Worth Winning, the only parenting book I know of with a money-back guarantee. I wrote that when I was single. I wasn't dating. I didn't have kids. But I did have 17 years in the martial arts day-to-day working with families and kids, plus my own trauma and recovering from that. So I had something to go back on. This is a 17, 19-year-old. He has read a bunch of personal development books, and he's grown up and had his experiences. So I think he has something valuable to offer the conversation, and his perspective will be tempered over the next 10 to 20 years as he actually gets into relationships, gets his heart broken. You know, the metaphor of the knight in shining armor, you should run away from, because the knight in shining armor is untested. They have no chinks in their armor. They haven't been in battle. It's the grizzled veterans that are going the direction you want to go. The knight in black armor, that's who you want to talk to. That's who you want to listen to, because they have a perspective that's been tried and tested. And you got to make sure they're going the direction you want to go. And so that's where, you know, you have that clinical side, but you have the experiential side working with kids as a CEO. You're coming in with such a skill set of experience. So, you know, I can handle the kid that's in this level of trauma. You're not. That's cakewalk comparison. Doesn't mean you're not in pain. Doesn't mean you're not suffering, because, you know, there's no absolute scale of human suffering. There's no, oh, you broke a nail. That's one unit of pain, but you lost a finger. That's 25 units of pain, right? There's nothing like that. Pain suffering is subjective. But yeah, I think it's super important. What's the outcome? And be open to the tools and be clear in the communication versus projecting. You have this label, so you must be.
And tell me again, introjecting, how do you describe that?
So projection is you take your crap and you throw it out on other people. Introjection, you take it inward. So you create situations around you so that life punishes you. Because no one's punishing me. No one's hurting me. So I'm going to arrange for the world to hurt me.
Right. It's normal. It's familiar. It's predictable.
Yeah. That's my safety, because that's what I grew up in. That's my set point in my unconscious barometer. So I have a couple I'm working with, and the wife gave the husband an ultimatum and said, you fix this or I'm divorcing you. You have a year. And talking with him, he had been through some trauma as a kid, some physical violence with his father. His mother died at 14 and left him with this guy. And so there's some wounding there. But also there is, if I show no emotion, if I'm neutral, I don't get any attention. I get left alone. So that was his defense. And so they've been together for, you know, over 10 years. And for the early part of their relationship, that strength within him was powerful for her, for whatever her life conditions. But over time and with kids, like, I need to know you're with me. I don't feel you. And he's like, I don't know how to do that because I never learned. So he's got a 4-year-old version, a 14-year-old version, and then there's the man he wants to be. And the 14-year-old's driving the bus. So we had to integrate that piece and take away that wound. And that wasn't, it's not super complicated to get to the root of that and resolve it. But now he can show up more powerfully, because what he was doing is he was putting himself into a situation where his wife, his kids, his job, they're putting pain into him, not physical abuse, but the you're worthless, no one cares about you. If you're too much, you're going to get abandoned. And so what happens is, because he's living in that pattern of fear, he's actually creating a situation where if he doesn't change, he is going to be abandoned. So that feminine's going to leave him again, like his mom left him at 14, his wife's going to leave him at like 14 years. Isn't that an interesting parallel? Because that next January will be 14 years in their relationship. And it's like, as I start to show that to him, he goes, oh, because he can now see what's actually happening, because we took that unconscious and brought it out to see. And he goes, oh, now he can begin to make different choices. Right.
Yeah.
And so that introjection, that is like, that's something that's not talked about, I don't think, enough, because projection. Yeah. And you're putting yourself into other people. Yeah. But the introjection is more powerful. It's more insidious, because it's almost invisible.
Yeah. Yeah, I learned to talk about that. My home school of counseling talks about organizing principles, right? And mm-hmm. so those organizing principles are shaped into us as young people, and then we carry them forward as if they're absolute truths, right? Mm-hmm. And so in your client's example, you know, the women in my life, you know, eventually leave me, right? So, I got to be careful about how much energy I put into this, because what's it going to be worth? You know, this person's going to leave me anyway.
Right.
And so then in personal development world, though, we talk about inner vision, right? Your inner vision, right, creates your external reality. And if people think, mm-hmm. oh, that's crazy, whatnot. But, from a psychology counseling perspective, yeah, that's what we talk about. If your organizing principle is the yep. thing that's limiting you, then you're going to carry that with you. And you never check it, right? When I'm working with new counselors, I'll tell them, like, that client, that patient is bringing that organizing principle in there with you. And they don't think, oh yeah, this counselor, they're not going to think this way. No, they're bringing it front and center, and they're expecting you, even in your professional, non-biased, you know, tabula rasa perspective, to, you know, just confirm that this is the way the world is, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's mm-hmm. waiting yeah. for it to happen.
They've got a gestalt, and then they've got these different archetypes that are mapped, you know, different leaves on the tree. Is it a coniferous tree? Is it a deciduous tree? Is it needs to be in sunshine, but it's been half in shade? So, I mean, there's all these, mm-hmm. there's all these different metaphors that we can use to just kind of get to this unconscious awareness, mm-hmm. and then we can begin to shift it. And the truth is, if you're a human being beyond like birth, there is no tabula rasa, because right. we're imprinting all the time. And so it's always that, hold on, I heard you say this, what does that mean? You know, and then being able to feed it back so they can really get clear on, well, here's what you said, but what else could it mean? Where else could it go?
And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you reach through, give me a virtual slap, but I think it's your background and tradition that actually talks about that imprinting is happening prior to birth as well, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the unconscious works in metaphor and imagery of various sorts. And so, you know, when I do, like, if I'm going to do an intervention with someone, we're going to release anger, sadness, fear, hurt, guilt. One of the questions that we go to find where that first moment of that emotion, if you were to know, was it before, during, or after your birth? And they'll say whatever they say. And that's the unconscious saying something, right? And it's before, before birth. Okay. Was it in the womb or before? It was in the womb. It was before. Was it actually? I don't know. I wasn't there. And technically you weren't either, because who you are now is not who you were then. But for the unconscious, that's how it's stored or how it's represented. All right, cool. We're going to run with it, because the unconscious is internally consistent and has its own internal logic. So we're going to run with it. Before birth, great. Was it genetic or was it lifetimes ago? And really the way I'm receiving that is a long freaking time ago is how I kind of run with it. It doesn't matter to me if it's factually multi-generational or they've been through three life regressions and they used to be an emu. How is that informing me of the energy of the person in front of me, and how can I serve them? That's really what I'm listening for. I'm not here to discuss the merits of past life regeneration versus, because I wasn't there, I don't know. Sure. And until I die and come back exactly the way I am now, I don't really have an opinion, because yeah. Kung Fu guy, I deal with reality. I'm going to punch you in your freaking face. All right, cool. Let's deal. That's energy, right? And it's yeah. honest and it's direct. And all right, let's go. Let's bang.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I was tapping into, you know, this idea of, you know, honoring women, right? Because that in them, they carry the eggs that will or could come forth into a human being, right? And so depending on how that woman was treated, right, in her own relationships or society and whatnot, that's kind of where I met, you know, that imprinting could be started, you know, prior to birth too.
Well, even, yeah, in Chinese medicine, when a woman is pregnant, she needs to think beautiful thoughts. Mm-hmm. She needs to see, you know, emotionally, physically, she needs to be given like information, education, because they're really crazy crap genetically. When my wife was pregnant with my daughter was developing the eggs that are going to be my great granddaughters.
Right.
And it's like, huh? Because you've got this. So then you've got what's going on in vitro and how is that imprinting and genetic markers and what's turning on and turning off. And there's a bunch of complexity that we don't fully understand, but it doesn't make sense that, well, if I can give mom the least amount of stress and the most cool, interesting things, and really I'm not going to protect my wife because I think she's weak or I think she's incapable. It's because I think she's precious. Right. And I want to give her the best possible things because she is someone, something important to me.
Absolutely.
Right. So if that's my energy versus, you know, women are and should only be, go make me a sandwich and all that stupid crap. You know, I get kind of the humor of it, But on the other side, there is some unconscious stuff that's being imprinted, you know? And so, so as we play in that space, we really want to give this the best possible opportunity to start, because there is direct correlations between in vitro nutrition and what happens and how the kids develop. And if you're not getting certain things in your system, you know, you and I both know if certain psychological factors aren't in place at a certain point, they never develop, right? Sociopathy totally comes from a lack of empathy, but that's empathy is a brain structure and it's a socialization both. And if a kid experiences a significant emotional event before that structure fully integrates, that's where we start to get narcissistic borderline personality. We start getting reactive attachment. We get all these different things that start to show up. And if that piece didn't even begin to form and then someone goes through an emotional event, it can be completely shut off and it never shows up. And that's how we end up with sociopaths.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as recovery. I'm a recovered sociopath. Ain't an animal, because they don't function like that. Their brain chemistry literally is jacked and their brain structures are jacked. So it's like, yeah, being able to be aware of what are we creating environmentally? What are we creating psychologically, psychosocially, sociopolitically, socioeconomically, all that stuff, because it's Chinese, it all mixes. That's my worldview, is a lot of Chinese field theory. Everything impacts everything by some way.
Yeah.
They all have resonances. Mm-hmm. And to deny all that stuff and say, nope, only this one thing matters. It's like, have you dealt with people much?
Yeah, there's a local university here in my town, and I went there for undergraduate. And I haven't seen it advertised recently, but they used to bring, a group of monks over, a group of lamas over, and they would do a mandala ceremony. And so I remember dragging my wife and my kids there. I can't remember if I had one or two, I remember going and watching them, and I was just, really into it in my graduate school training. One of my professors was Jungian as well. So I have a deep appreciation for Carl Jung and the impact that he's had on this world, and that most people don't even realize it, unfortunately. But so I was watching this mandala. I went to her for the destruction ceremony, right? And so, being there and getting the blessings, and then watching them just, whisk this away into the creek that runs through our town, and then listening to their belief about what was happening there. And that idea that each grain of sand came with a prayer for this world as it's dropped. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many millions of grains of sand that went into it. It was a pretty big, mandala, probably right. 10 foot diameter. Right. And that's their mindset. Why do these guys spend, literally 3 days doing this? Because they are putting all of this positive energy, one grain of sand, into this mandala, and then they wipe it into the stream, and then they believe it goes into the ocean. Right. And then it goes out to the rest of the globe. And I was just like, wow. Like,
and even if it's not physically actually true, the intentionality behind it and how it affects other human psychologies,
right?
Do the opposite. Do you think, it's like people, can you sit there and take 5 minutes every single day and imagine yourself in perfect health and perfect vitality and feeling your body strong and vital and dynamic, and you're full of light and love and passion? And do you think you could will yourself sick? And people are like, oh, don't be silly. Mm-hmm. But we all know if you sit and obsess about a problem nonstop, you can will yourself sick. So why is it we go biased negative, but it's too easy to do the positive? But what if you could? I'm not saying could, I'm saying what if you could? Just, you don't actually have to believe the belief. What if you just pretended you believe the belief for right now and see how it impacts your life?
Yeah,
that's the cool thing about beliefs, is you can just pretend, you could just believe that you believe it and then run with it and see what happens.
Yeah, just show up at first, right?
A crazy theme.
All right, Jeremy, how would you describe or define mindset?
Mindset is, for me, it's a playground, honestly. So I think of it, it could be a dance, it could be a battle, it could be a war, it could be a song, it could be a breeze, right? There's lots of different ways to relate. And in our Kung Fu system, it comes out of a Buddhist tradition, Shaolin Temple, and it's actually part of what's called the Yogacaric Buddhism, which is where the mind and the body kind of work together. But the only thing that's truly eternal is the nature of mind. Not mind, just the nature of mind. And so, everything it comes into that. We have six basic senses: what you see, what you hear, what you feel, what you think, what you taste, what you smell. And you could imagine a monkey in a room that has six windows, and the monkey screams, the sound's going to come out in all six areas. And so the mindset, how we filter, how we process what we think, it also shows up in what we see. Because I said earlier, the reticular activating cortex, you can program your unconscious mind to filter negative stuff out or filter positive stuff out. So what we see is influenced by how we're thinking. How we feel is influenced by how we think. All of these things, the unconscious drives the body, drives our actions. The conscious mind programs the unconscious. And so paying attention to that mindset of where am I placing? And I think of mindset not static, but dynamic. So you can borrow the concepts of neuroplasticity. And as the mind thinks about itself, because it's a self-aware thing, as we think about ourselves, we can change what we're thinking as we're thinking about it. We can change the meaning of any event in our lives, because meaning is only what you choose, right? Nothing has meaning except the meaning you give it. So what meaning could you give to this moment that would help somewhere else? Our conscious mind runs like 20 to 137 bits of data a second. I've seen various reports. Our unconscious is 2 million to 11 million bits of data a second. So literally in any given moment of your life, there are literally millions of interpretations available to you if you choose to notice it. And so just that concept of, wait, I can choose what to notice in my world. Not everybody knows that or believes that or thinks that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's true or it's not true, because I don't know. But if it were true, isn't that an interesting thing to play with? And that's why, for me, mindset goes back to playground and dancing. So because I interact with so many different types of kids and adults, I have lots of metaphors and frames, and I can move between all of them relatively easily. Sure. Simply because I have a more dynamic I have a management book that talks about being behaviorally flexible, and I have a lot of flexible behavior. I'm rigid in my outcome and my result. It's all about helping myself and others to feel warm, big, and happy, mm-hmm. play games we both get to win. And so from there, that allows me a lot of freedom in what I do and how I show up. I'm not so rigid. I have to be a certain way. You're a Kung Fu master. You must be. Well, but have you watched and done any reading on the eight enlightened mortals? Because one of them's a drunk. And he's like, wait, you're enlightened, but you're a drunk? You're not supposed to drink alcohol if you're working on your mindset. It's like, yeah. And there's actually Taoist masters that are enlightened that are married and have kids. What? No, you can't be spiritual and have a sexual relationship with someone. That's not okay. But is that reality, or is that your rules about reality? Just asking, because your mileage may vary. I don't know what's right. I don't know what's true. I have a suspicion. But I won't say what I think is right. I will say what I think you did right. And I will say what I did wrong, but I won't say what you did wrong. I'll just get curious about it. And that's all part of my fundamental mindset, like how I play with and engage with.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to
answer your question.
Well, yeah, let me see. Let me give it a shot. I'll reflect back to you and see how it lands with you. So part of what I took from that is, if you think about mindset could be a million different things to a million different people, right? And that part of having, and I'll just use my framework, you know, a part of having an upgraded mindset is being able to slow down for a second and be intentional about, you know, what am I experiencing right now, right? And why does that make sense? And then, what am I going to choose to ultimately do with that experience, right? A million different things to a million different people, right? And that therein is a skill in of itself, right? And then the next thing that came to my mind was kind of Peter Singer in Untethered Soul, right? Are we beings that think, or am I a thinking being, or am I a being that happens to think? Those are two different things, right? And so I don't know if you're familiar with him and his work, but his thing is to, he'll say, hello, is there anybody in there? Right? And that right. voice that said, yes, I'm here, that's you, right? Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the thing that thinks, you know, I've got 10 more minutes to do this podcast, or what am I going to eat? That's part of you that thinks, but that's not necessarily you. So I'll shut up and see if I mapped on to you.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because who are you before you think? Who are you before you speak? Who are you before you breathe? There's a meditation in some branches of Buddhism called meditation on the antecedent of breath. So you instead of focusing on following the breath, you focus on what happens before you breathe. because there's the human animal driving the breath process, but there's an intentionality or a nature of something before the breath to be aware of the breath. Because animals don't sit and contemplate their breathing, they just breathe. But we have the ability to contemplate our breathing, and breathing is a great metaphor for the switching between parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems, because it's automatic if we don't pay attention to it, but it can be intentional if we do pay attention to it.
Right.
Now, try to stop your spleen from spleening. That's way too unconscious. But you can slow your heart rate down. I've gotten my heartbeat down to like 15 or 20 beats a minute once upon a time, just slowly working on relaxing. I used to donate plasma in college, and I would go in and I'd mess with my, I couldn't find a sperm bank, so I had to do plasma. Yeah, I got the tracks to prove it. But I would go in, because they always do a pre-screen before you can go donate, and I would mess with my heart rate. I would slow it down or speed it up. And they'd be like, oh, wait, we can't have you. You don't fit the parameters. So take 5 minutes, come back. And then my heart rate would be a different place. It was just messing. Mm-hmm. But it was just that practice of just slowing the heart rate down or speeding it up and just learning to control that. That's a skill. Not a lot of animals sit there and just do it because they're bored or because they just, it's fun. And so that a million different interpretations. There are certain structures that we have in our unconscious. That's why I like Jung so much. But there's certain things that we all kind of share, this collective universal unconscious, but then there's the individual personal unconscious. There's your own unique experiences. Right. So we say in our Kung Fu system, there's one system because there's one human species, but there's 7.5 plus billion styles of human being. So that means there's 7.5 plus billion styles of martial arts. Because style is personal, it's subjective, it's unique, it's the way you play, right? My work ties into basically games and stories. So if we use the bow from Shaolin, the right hand makes a fist, and I'll do it that way. Right hand makes a fist, left hand make a palm. This is the tiger, this is the visible world. For me, this is games. And then this is the story, the justification. This is the dragon, the wisdom, the invisible. So behavior, justification. And it's just a constant interplay because all kids play games and all kids tell stories. Mm-hmm. Is your game worth winning and is your story worth telling? Mm-hmm. And so when we learn to get a hold of those two pieces, the structure doesn't matter so much. The nuts and bolts doesn't matter so much in my opinion, in my experience.
So BS and BJs, that's what you're all about. I got you on that one.
Sorry. Nice. That was good. That was good.
All right. Jeremy, two more things. Mm-hmm. First one is, what I like to do for the folks that listen to this show is for them to walk away literally from, turning off the podcast and being able to have at least something that's actionable related mm-hmm. to mindset, right? So I'll ask you that. And then also, this is your opportunity to give another plug for everything that you're doing and how people can connect with you. And I just got to say, this was a fascinating conversation. Hopefully it's the first of many. I really enjoyed it. But so part number one, listeners to this podcast, something that they can do when they turn this off and they return back to whatever they're going to be facing in their life, something that they can do to upgrade their mindset.
Yeah. What if you could appreciate the next thing that happens? Mm-hmm. Trade your expectations for appreciation and just appreciate it. Good, bad, or sideways, convenient, inconvenient, just appreciate it. Go, wow, this is interesting. Be curious, be open. And if you start to do that, especially with people that you're intimate with, and you switch from expectation to appreciation, a lot of the drama disappears. Mm-hmm. A lot of the need to be right or to justify or to validate, it's like, I don't need it because you're amazing and I love the fact that I'm with you, right? My wife and I were joking just this morning because she's going on a road trip for the next 6 hours and she has the debit card because we have like one card right now. And she's like, oh, I have the card. Are you going to be able to buy this stuff for dinner? Because I'm making meatloaf and whatever. And I was like, yeah, I got it handled. I'm resourceful. I'm a genius. I married you. And when I put that stuff in there, like I make good decisions. I married you. It was a great decision. Mm-hmm. And so just that little bit of appreciation, whatever static, because that always happens. There's always static in the channel, whatever friction, whatever difficulty, schedules mismatch, deep in her unconscious and in my unconscious, there's these references. We both acknowledge the best decision we ever made was to get together. And so playing that place of appreciation, everything begins to change. And you're completely in control of that. Nobody else can decide what you choose to appreciate or what you choose to have gratitude for. Literally, it's your superpower. Suffering is self-generated, but so is appreciation. Mm-hmm. And if you take that, traffic jam. Appreciate it. Wow, I'm such a lucky to live in such a place where versus there's no cars.
Right. Right.
Right. So yeah, that's actionable. It's literally right this instant. It's a gift you give yourself and everyone else because it changes the way you show up. It changes your resonance.
Love it. Expectation to appreciation. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
That's massive.
Jeremy, I'm pretty sure that there's folks that are going to hear this podcast and they're going to want to know more about you and they're going to want to know how to connect with you and maybe even seek you out and hire you for the things that you do. So tell us how we can get in touch with you and tell us, you know, what it is that you're doing.
So just do a search on Jeremy Roadruck, R-O-A-D-R-U-C-K. I'm literally the only me on the internet because there's only about 200, maybe 300 Roadrucks in the world. So that helps. But Facebook is where I'm most active, facebook.com/JeremyR.TheKungFuGuy. I have a professional page and a personal page. I'm in the personal page the most. I have a group, Win-Win Parenting, that I go and post stuff on. And you know, I have a YouTube channel, YouTube/KungFuGuyJeremy. There's a theme here. But those are the best places to get a hold of me. You can also go, and I'll give you the specific URL, but my book is Your Best Child Ever, Is This Game Worth Winning? You can buy it on Amazon or you can go pick it up from a Bitly link and get it for free as a PDF download, like immediately. Mm-hmm. I still have it available for sale, but I'm giving it away for free simply because there's so much pain and difficulty and challenge in the world, especially in our families, that doesn't need to be there. So I'm less concerned about making a profit on this book versus getting the information into people's hands and go play different freaking games.
Right.
When I do in the Kung Fu school, when I do stuff with the kids, the idea that, wait, if I do this, I do my chores before mom tells me, and then she's going to feel warm, big, and happy. And then she'll have that available to help me feel warm, big, and happy. Who loses? And they're going, they've never heard the idea that we could play a game and we both win. And that's like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10, 14. And they're going, wait, what? Yeah. If you help light them up first, then they have that energy to send back to you, who loses? Nobody? Yeah, everybody gets to win. Mm-hmm. And the problem in the world right now is people are playing a don't lose game. Mm-hmm. I don't want to lose. If I win, I feel guilty because it means somebody else had to lose. I don't want anyone to lose. Mm-hmm. That's not how the world gets better. We have to focus on winning. Win or learn. And then change the frequency. You change the patterns that go on because people aren't afraid to make mistakes. They're not afraid to quote unquote fail. Only way to fail is to quit. You're still in the game. What did you learn not to do? Do it a little differently. Drive forward. Creates more confidence. Creates more emotional safety. Lights the world up. A lighted candle loses nothing by lighting another candle.
Yeah.
So let's light people up. Let's be mirrors to reflect that light back because not everyone pays attention to how awesome they are and they need those reminders. Dude, that was awesome. No, it's no big deal. I just, no. You don't understand. I grew up in dysfunction. That was freaking awesome. You're amazing. High five.
Yeah.
What? Oh, cool. So, and then be a candlestick maker, either be a teacher or be a parent, create more candles, light more candles. Yeah. So that's the best way to get a hold of me. Facebook, the parenting program is my main website, theparentingprogram.com. And yeah, I'm available. My favorite thing to do, honestly, is let's get rid of anger, sadness, fear, hurt, guilt, usually in one conversation, mm-hmm. about an hour and a half. Let's just blow those out forever, in your past. And it changes how you show up in your future. Awesome. That's my favorite thing to do, because just that whole, you get a neurological house cleaning and all this projection stops and all these making yourself wrong. When you stop fighting yourself, you realize how much energy you were wasting and making yourself wrong from stuff that really wasn't your deal anyway. It was somebody else's bad programming that you injected into your system. Change the programming, move forward. There's, in my opinion, there's nobody broken on the inside. It can be broken physically, you know, scars here, scars here, scars here. You can break yourself physically, but mentally, emotionally, no. You're running bad code. Let's change that programming.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jeremy, super, super appreciative of your time. And I also just want to honor you for that last little piece about, here's this book here's my contribution to the world. You can buy it or you can get it for free. And here's the reasons why. And you know, I have that same model. And when I try to share that model with other people, they kind of look at you crazy because you're right, because they're looking at winners and losers, right? That if you give it away for free, then how can you win, right? Well, I got a different definition of what winning means.
Right.
And why don't you let me share that with you? So, but I'm going to encourage people who are listening to this, go buy the book, right? Because then that helps Jeremy do more of what Jeremy does. And I'm convinced that that's going to be an absolute wonderful thing for this world if we have more people like Jeremy doing what Jeremy does. So
it literally is a game changer because we changed the game. Mm-hmm. Let's just go play a win-win game. Mm-hmm. Economically, emotionally, sociologically, religiously, politically. That's it. Just, but how do you do that? I've got that, right? I spent my whole life on it and I'm still spending my life on it. So let's go play.
Yeah. All right, my friend. I truly meant it when I said that. Hope this is the first of many conversations. This was a great, however long it was, and we could keep going, I think, but it is Valentine's Day and I got to hit the road for a basketball tournament. So thank you so much.
Life has its way, unfortunately.
That's right. But I'm going to
change. Thank you, Mr. Nick. I appreciate everything.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in and listening to this show with Jeremy Rodruck. And I really, really, really want to encourage you to incorporate his tip for your mindset. Change your expectation into appreciation. Now, it seems simple, but if it's something that you can do in the moment, it can make a world of difference and give you the outcome that you're looking for. I really hope you're enjoying the Upgraded Life podcast. And if you are, do me a favor, subscribe to it. Give me a 5-star review. Do all those things that lets people know that this is a worthwhile thing to listen to and plug into. Again, thanks for listening. This is Nick, encouraging you to realize and reach your potential. And you do that by upgrading your mindset, your mission, and your movement. That's the Upgraded Life.